everyone, and welcome to episode 24 of the Home Hour Podcast. This is the show where we talk about everything that happens inside your four walls, your family life and parenting, food and homemaking, marriage and money, and even the work we do from home. I'm your host and creator of the Happiest Home blog, Megan Francis. So today is my daughter Clara's fifth birthday, and if you read my blog regularly, you'll know that I am a big proponent of the laid-back and sometimes rather sloppy, small home family-based birthday party. We have five kids in the family. Four of them have birthdays that are all in a row in the fall. And so it's not always possible for us to throw big parties, and it's just not something I've really invested a lot of time or money in over the years. But five just feels like a really momentous birthday to me, especially because this is my last child and my only daughter, and I remember my fifth birthday, and it just really feels like a big milestone. She'll be going off to school in the fall, and it's just no longer a baby anymore. So this year, I really am going a little bit outside of my comfort zone by planning. It's still going to be a family-based small party, but we are doing a theme. She asked for a Hawaiian luau theme. So we have all the party favors and decorations, and we're going, as soon as I'm done recording this, I'm going to go out to the kitchen and attempt to transform a cake into a beach scene. So wish me luck there. I will have to report back on that later. We have a great show coming up today. My style co-host, Shayna Dragelis from Ain't No Mom Jeans is back, and the two of us are going to talk about how to incorporate spring style into your wardrobe when there's still snow on the ground. And where I am, there is definitely still a lot of snow on the ground. In fact, we had a snow day yesterday, and I think we had like 9 inches of snow the night before. Crazy. We also talk about what to wear on spring break, especially if you're going to Disney World. That's a big question that we get, both of us get a lot. And so we talk a lot about shoes and shorts and whether or not you should wear capris and all kinds of other stuff. That's really fun. Today's featured interview is with Todd and Kathy Adams of Zen Parenting Radio. And Todd and Kathy and I talk about how to know ourselves as parents and how that translates into a calmer and happier relationship with our kids. But first, I want to take a second to talk about a service I really love. Okay, so I just mentioned today that today is my daughter's birthday, and I have to tell you that Amazon Prime really saved my rear end this year. Like most kids in the United States, at least most little girls that I know, my daughter is a little bit obsessed with Frozen, the movie Frozen. And what I didn't realize is that the Frozen toys are very scarce. Apparently, Disney did not anticipate the level of desire for these toys or something because they're really hard to get. And we live in sort of a rural area where besides Target and maybe Walmart and a couple other places, there's really no place for me to go get toys. If I can't find them there, I have to drive an hour or more away to go to a different place to find them. So, you know, I waited till not the last minute, but less than a week until Clara's birthday, and then decided to try to find these toys and was unable to track down what I wanted. So I went on Amazon.com and used my Amazon Prime membership to get free 2-day shipping on the Frozen toys of my choice. And also, while I was there, I got some of the favors and the party supplies that I talked about earlier. I got some cute little beach chairs to put on the cake and some Lays and some grass skirts. Really inexpensive, free 2-day shipping. They showed up a couple of days later, and I didn't have to go out and do a bunch of shopping. My time is really valuable to me, and so I really love that I can just jump on and make a purchase quickly. So I don't know if you already have Prime, you probably know all about this, but if you don't, let me just tell you some of the other stuff you can get. So if you find something that's available on Amazon, you can have it in 2 days. You can also do overnight shipping, but the 2-day shipping is totally free. I'm a big fan of shopping locally, and I try to spend about half of our Christmas and birthday dollars in the stores in our little downtown, but pretty much everything else I buy on Amazon. I feel like the money and time I save doing that make it so there's more room in my budget and on my calendar to support the independent businesses too. So at Christmas, it's a huge win because I can just buy things as I think of them rather than having to do one big shopping trip. You know, I'll sometimes just add one thing to my shopping cart and wander away and then come back and add a couple other things. And then when I have two or three things, I know those things will probably be boxed together. So I just hit checkout. My credit card information is all saved. And the purchase is done. I don't have to think about it. It shows up on my door a couple days later. Also, if you have Amazon Prime, you get access to a bunch of movies and shows that you can stream for free. And there are a ton of books in the Kindle library that you can check out for free as well. So again, that's Amazon Prime. The price is about to go up. Right now it's $79 a year, and it's about to go up to $99 a year. I still think $99 is a steal and will continue to use it. But if you want to get the cheaper price now, you can go to my affiliate link. It's at thehappiesthome.com/prime, and you can get the $79 rate, I think, from now until maybe early April. But just go ahead and get it now. You're going to love it. thehappiesthome.com/prime. Okay, on to my discussion about spring style with Shayna from Ain't No Mom Jeans. Hey everyone, I'm here with Shayna Dragelis of Ain't No Mom Jeans to talk about style. Hi Shayna, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I am great. Okay, so this week we are talking about how to incorporate spring styles while there's still snow on the ground. And I know that at least while we're taping this, and you know, it might not air for a week or two, but judging the winter that we've had so far, I'm going to just guess that there is still going to be snow on the ground then and possibly for like a month after that. And yet all these spring styles are coming out in the store. So how do we start incorporating those, Shayna?
Okay. So the easiest way to jump into spring, if you're wearing your snow boots, is to just look at lightening up your accessories. I have been really liking white. I know, you know, there's this whole thing you're not supposed to wear white until, what is it, after Labor Day?
Memorial Day, wait. Memorial Day?
Yeah.
Whatever one comes first.
You know what I'm saying. Anyway, yes. I love it in the winter. And so I think, especially if you're the kind of person, and this is definitely me, where I end up wearing mostly black and gray all winter long, a pop of white leather, whether it's your bag or a belt, you know, something like that is a really great way to make your whole outfit look a little bit more ready for spring.
Mm, yep.
Another trick that I keep using is I've swapped, because I love bright lips. I love bright lipstick. Even with like, and actually I should say, especially with dressed down like sweatshirts and jeans and things. Mm, okay. And I think dark lipstick kind of gives it something a little special. But right about now, I usually switch from red to pink lips. I feel like pink lipstick is a little bit more springy, and I like lipstick with bold sunglasses. I don't know if you've seen those, like they're just like brightly colored sunglasses.
Okay. Yeah. 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 They look a little 80s.
They look a lot 80s.
Yeah. Okay.
A lot 80s. But you know, you can get them in yellow and pink and turquoise blue, and those are kind of a fun way to add a little like more color to like a dreary winter sort of look.
Yeah. Yeah. And what about hair? I mean, is there something you can do differently? Assuming that, you know, I don't have much to work with, but.
I really like, well, it's funny because Vogue came out in their January edition and they talked about, you know, 2014 being the year of dressing dangerously.
Okay.
So I kind of liked that. But if you look at, and actually my favorite place to go to for hair accessories is ASOS. Although, yeah, I'm not using them right now.
ASOS.
ASOS. ASOS.
Okay. Is that like a store in the mall or is that a website or what?
It is a website. I think they're out of the UK.
Oh, okay.
They have free shipping, I believe, to the US.
Okay.
And free return shipping. And their price point is just a little bit higher than Forever 21.
Okay.
But the quality is better.
Okay.
But their hair accessory section is really big. And so they have everything from like funky little barrettes or bobby pins with like a few flowers on them to like huge floral tiaras where it's like major flowers encircling your head.
This sounds really interesting. I have to say that, you know, I have really short hair. And I don't remember the most recent picture you might have seen of me. It's probably even shorter on the sides now. And for a while, I was really rocking a lot of headbands. And at some point, I just got a little tired of that look. I felt like it was very cute. But people would always say to me, oh, you're so cute. I was got a little tired of people telling me how cute I was. So I'm like trying to find some other ways to – it does get a little boring.
Yeah.
And just for listeners who aren't familiar with Shayna's story, she's currently – dealing with battling, what is the word you like to use? Cancer. So I don't know how much hair you have at the moment, Shayna.
You like to cancer.
What's that?
I'm just laughing. You're like, what is the word you like to use? Cancer?
No, I mean about battling.
Oh.
I know cancer is the word that you use to describe cancer. I mean, are you like, you know, like kicking its butt or like, you know?
I'm totally kicking its butt. It's all
okay, like, good.
It's over and done with. I'm in recovery.
Okay.
But I'm also, you know, hair challenged at the moment.
Right. Right. So you also have not that much to work with, I'm assuming.
No, okay. Definitely. I have less to work with than you, I can pretty much guarantee you.
Okay. So, gosh, I hate like we just totally made light of that for the last 3 minutes. But, you know, we're talking about style here and there's just no.
We are talking about style. Yeah. Serious topic here. Come on.
Yes. So anyway, this is a topic that I'm sure. So I know you have a wig. You wear one regularly, right?
Yes, definitely.
Do you also use other sorts of head adornment? Or, I mean, how is this working?
Okay. I do. I've been, I'll use like little, I have like a faux flower that I've stuck in my little wigs before.
Okay.
And it's a little cutesy though.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it'll be exactly what you're looking for, but I'm kind of liking it. I kind of like it. Or some of these, you can just find like the bobby pins. They don't all have to be like floral or rhinestone-y. There's some really tasteful and like art deco sort of designed ones that are really cool. And they add kind of a little, you know.
That actually does sound really cool. I like something like that. I like that kind of structure.
More graphic.
Look. Yeah. Because, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
All right. Well, I'm going to check out ASOS and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. Now, while Shayna and I are taping this, it actually is Fashion Week, right? That's this week, correct? How closely are you watching it? And has anything shocking come out of it? Like, is there anything that you've seen, any pictures or whatever that you thought, oh no, or wow?
You know, it's funny. Fashion Week has become almost less about the shows and more about the scene outside.
Ah, okay.
And it's just kind of a zoo. And so if you notice almost all of the Fashion Week, you know, unless you're on like style.com and you're like, show me the runway shows, the pictures from the runway shows, right. Barring that, most of the other sites that do good coverage of Fashion Week, like Refinery29 or Who What Wear Daily, they're really focusing on the street style snaps out front. So those are always fun.
Cool. All right. So we kind of derailed ourselves here talking about spring. Okay. I'll take all the blame. I derailed us. We're talking about incorporating spring style into our winter wardrobes. And one thing that came to mind for me is the humble yet now ubiquitous scarf. What is happening with the scarf? Is the scarf going anywhere or is anything new happening with the scarf?
What can I do with this scarf?
What can I do with this? It took me like up until a year ago to learn how to tie a scarf. So I'm just saying I'm scarf challenged. It might take me a while to move with any changes, but I'm just wondering if there's something that you've seen coming around the bend.
Well, it's funny. Refinery 29 just ran an article about, you know, how to update your look. And they were like, instead of a statement necklace, pull out the scarf.
You're like, wow.
There you go. It's like we've held on so long that it's now new again.
Right.
Scarves are great. Scarves are great. I love, especially right about now. I mean, it's still cold. You still want a scarf, but you don't necessarily have to have the woolly one.
Mm-hmm.
So right about now is a nice time to start looking for those like lighter weight, linen scarves. Mm-hmm. Gap does good ones. Loft does good ones. J. Crew, I think, does some as well. But that's an easy way to sort of like just lighten up your winter look. And they still look cute with your winter jacket and stuff. But I also like white jeans. Would you wear white jeans right now?
Gosh, I guess I would if I had a pair.
Oh, well,
I don't have a pair of white jeans.
Well, if you're thinking of getting some for the summer.
Yeah, okay.
Because I mean, the thing that's nice about white, even though it's like muddy and gross out sometimes too, you can just bleach them.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I am a slob, so I tend to stay away from anything white just because I'm afraid. Well, I'm not just afraid. I know that I'll mess it up. But, you know, that's a good point. It can be bleached.
Yes.
So I might have to break out of my...
Right. I would avoid cream, but white I'm all for.
Oh, because you can't bleach the cream. Yeah, you know, that's another good point. I think that I've ruined a few pair of cream pants before. And
yeah.
Another thing that came to mind while you were talking about... just kind of things that you can start wearing, like white jackets and things. You know, I often steer away from, and you're in a winter climate, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
You probably know this feeling. Like, I really want to be warm this time of year. And so I'm like steering away from the pastel lightweight sweaters, but I guess you could layer stuff like that. I mean, that didn't really occur to me, but if I didn't want to just come out with a tiny little thin cardigan.
Well, and I think you can just, if you can switch your whole color palette up too, like if you switch to, instead of dark wash denim, go with a light wash denim, and instead of black, go with like a light gray or cream and white. Or actually Zara right now has this fantastic, like oversized light pink cable knit cozy sweater.
Ooh.
So that with a pair of light wash denim and really like, I know everybody likes the black boots, but my favorite color boot is either camel or taupe because I feel like they, you know, you can wear them in the winter, but they also feel, you know, a little bit lighter for spring. And so you can just, you know, you don't have to change the fabric, but just shift the color palette to a little bit lighter and you feel a little more springy.
I love camel boots and taupe boots. And it's funny because, I just realized the other day, I don't even own a pair of dressy black boots. I have like one nice pair of knee-high black boots, but they're very casual.
Yeah.
And the other ones I have are all either brown, camel, or taupe. But to me, they just feel so warm and rich. And like, I think sometimes there's a little bit of that. There's a little danger of going into the Wicked Witch of the West thing with the black boots.
Yes.
And I have very thin legs, so I have to get kind of tight. And I feel like it's a dangerous line that I'm always like a little too close to crossing when it comes to the black boots.
Yeah, I don't think I'll ever be able to do pointy toe black boots again. Although now that I've said that, like they'll come back in raging and I'll be like,
I gotta have those.
Yes. Yeah. But the other thing that's big is this pattern, this pattern mixing stuff. Do you do this, Megan?
Oh gosh. Well, again, it's one of those things where I don't wear a ton of patterns to begin with. Honestly, I wear a lot of stripes, probably more stripes than I should wear.
Yep.
I don't like to use the word should, just saying. Sometimes I think I forget that stripes aren't always that flattering. Let's just put it that way. But like a floral and a plaid or something, I haven't really. That's just, I don't know. It's the kind of thing that I just would look at that and go, I don't know. I want to be the person who tries it, you know?
Yeah, well,
so maybe it'll inspire me.
The easiest way to do it is to get a floral scarf, like one of those lightweight floral scarves, and wear it with your striped shirt.
Oh, good idea. I like that.
That's like a nice, like easy way to sort of break into it.
So one question, and I don't field a lot of fashion questions on my blog. It's not something that I specialize in or focus on, but a surprising number of times people have written to me and asked me for advice, helping them dress for Disney World, which I've been to Disney World several times, and so I guess I'm somewhat of an expert, but I just think that that's such a funny, like, recurring question. And then Shayna suggested that we should do a segment on that same topic. Not just Disney World, but I guess that must be one of those things that just comes up again and again.
It does. It comes up over on Ain't No Mom Jeans again and again and again as well.
I think it's because, you know, first of all, you know it's going to be warm, but you don't always know exactly how warm. I've been there a few times, and sometimes the mornings are a little chilly, you know, and then by the mid-afternoon, it's hot. You want to be comfortable, but you don't want to be like that mom in the Disney World picture. You know the picture that you're thinking of in your head right now where she's wearing like a Mickey Mouse t-shirt and it's, you know,
bad khakis.
And it's just really unflattering. You don't want to be her either. So you want to kind of strike that balance between comfort and comfort and style.
Yeah.
So give me some of your tips. Lay them on me.
Well, Disney World's so tough because it does get so hot. Mm-hmm. I guess today, if I were about to walk into Disney World today, I would be pulling on some sort of sundress with a sweater and flat sandals that were not flip-flops or Tevas or sporty, but that were cute and comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And then in terms of like what kind of sundress you're going for, it depends on, you know, your style and your body. But I think in general, it has to be long enough where you can sit comfortably on those rides without worrying about the skirt doing anything strange.
Absolutely.
You know, so I'm not sure that a short shift mini dress, which is my favorite, I'm not sure I would be able to pull that off at Disney World.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I used to be like, well, I used to wear capris. I finally decided capris are the most unflattering thing I've ever worn in my entire life and stopped. But there was about 10 years in there where I just kept trying. Like, I just kept trying.
Good for you.
Because I was really I was very uncomfortable with my legs, you know?
Right.
I didn't want to wear shorts because I really felt like shorts looked bad on me. And then one day I actually took a picture of myself standing. And I think it was actually between my two Disney World trips, because I went for the first time in maybe 2009 or something. And then the second time I went two years later. And I was trying on clothes and I decided to take a picture of myself in shorts and a picture of myself in capri pants. And then I realized that I looked so much better in shorts. And I think that that's a lot more common. That I think that a good pair of shorts looks better on many women than they think that they do.
I totally agree. I feel like shorts don't get nearly as much love as they should.
Because I think that there's something about bearing that much of your leg that can feel really scary.
Yeah.
Especially if you don't get out in the sun a lot, or if you've got stretch marks or extra weight on your thighs or whatever. But a cut, like a well-cut pair of shorts that hits you in the right spot for you, I feel like is almost universally always flattering, where it's almost impossible to find a pair of capri pants that hit me in a place that doesn't make me look horrible.
Well, you'd have to go, in order to get capris to be really flattering, they have to be somewhere around your ankle bone and sort of slim. And if you can, if you can find those, I mean, they'd be perfect, but they also might end up being too hot for a Disney World situation.
Right. Yeah.
So, so if you're nervous about the dresses, I do like the shorts idea. And for people who are nervous about bearing leg, I really like the long, slim short. I'm sort of hesitant to call them Bermuda because that, at least for me, invokes these images of like wide flapping shorts, you know?
Yeah.
And that's not what I'm thinking of, like a really tailored trouser that ends nice and slim, but that ends right below your kneecap.
Okay.
Or right. Yeah, no, I like maybe that. Maybe right above your kneecap.
What kind of top would you pair with that?
I would pair, something pretty, something a little bit flowy and pretty, and kind of you can tuck it in or do a half tuck. A slim belt looks really cute too. And then just like a cute little sandal.
Yeah, I like that.
Something a little bit, but the short has to be not wide. It has to be tailored.
Okay. Yeah, that actually makes a lot. I'm picturing this in my head, and gosh, I look adorable in my head right now. So.
Really?
I'm going to have to totally try that. are they now, in our previous show, we mentioned the high-waisted short and pant. Let's talk about that really quick. Here's one problem that I have with this.
Okay.
Is that I tend to gain weight first in my tummy.
Yes.
And so theoretically, a high-waisted pant is great because it's going to cover up, you know, problem areas. But in practice, sometimes it just ends up squeezing me and really being horribly uncomfortable and causing a lot of squish, I guess. And I'm trying to figure out how you find the right pair of high-waisted.
Well, you have to sort of throw the sizing out the window.
Okay.
I think, and just start over from scratch. And so maybe the size that you would normally buy isn't the size that you want in a high-waisted.
Okay.
So, you know, start with that. And also there's different levels of high-waist. And so I am very short-waisted. There's not a lot of space between my bust line and my hips. And so I can't do the super high waist because it ends up, you know, sort of ending somewhere underneath my bust. And then I, you know, that's never a good look. So you got to kind of play around with various high-waisted shorts. But the thing that's nice is if you can find the right high-waisted short and you're willing, especially if you're willing to go a little bit shorter, you can do some really fun, like vintagey retro looks with, you know, some flat saltwater sandals. I don't know if you know of those, but those are like insanely comfortable. They can get wet. They dry. They've been around for like 50 years.
Saltwater sandals. No, I don't think I do know about those. You got a source idea?
Zappos carries them.
Okay.
Or actually, if you just Google saltwater sandals, they should come right up.
Okay.
They sell them for kids, but they've also started selling them for adults. And they look exactly like the sandals that you probably grew up wearing when you were a kid.
Okay.
Like just simple leather ankle wrap. But they kind of have this sort of like vintage look that I like.
They kind of look like a little fisherman-y or like they're like that brown leather. Yeah, I'm picturing them in my head.
Yeah, they and they come in like red, and which is my favorite, or navy, which is kind of cute too. So
okay.
And those are great ones to just like you can walk around on those babies all day.
Okay, well, now we really do have to wrap up, but Shayna, this has been great. Again, my guest is Shayna from Ain't No Mom Jeans, and that is aintnomomjeans.com, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
I thought so. I'll also have links to the things we talked about in today's show notes, and look forward to talking about fashion again soon. Thanks, Shayna.
Thank you.
Hey guys, Megan again. I hope you loved my discussion about spring style with Shayna of Ain't No Mom Jeans. She will be back with us every few weeks, so look for her in a future episode. In the meantime, will I take her advice and buy white jeans or mix plaids with florals? I don't know, but maybe I'll share in a future show. Now I'm really excited to introduce today's guests, Todd and Kathy Adams of Zen Parenting Radio. Kathy is the author of The Self-Aware Parent and The Self-Aware Parent 2, and she and Todd co-host a weekly parenting podcast, which is Zen Parenting Radio, as well as run classes and workshops for parents and kids. Now, if you've ever found yourself parenting a certain way out of anxiety or embarrassment, I think we all know what I'm talking about here. Your kid's having a meltdown and you're freaking out inside and, you know, you're just making all these snap decisions. You're going to love this discussion because we talk about how being a calm and zen parent really starts with knowing yourself and trusting yourself to make the right decisions for your kids. And Todd and Kathy also share some tips for how to react calmly in the moment and just in general, how to be a more mindful and self-aware parent. Enjoy the interview. Hi, Kathy and Todd.
Hi, Megan.
Hello.
How are you guys doing today?
Awesome.
Really good.
So before we started recording, we were just having a conversation about the snow here in the Midwest because Todd and Kathy are from Chicago, and I'm just across the lake in St. Joseph, Michigan, and it's again snowing.
So yes, again. And it was funny, Todd and I were talking this morning. We didn't even hear that it was supposed to snow today. Like, it was kind of an out of the blue thing. And
yeah, we had no idea. Same. I got up and went out and looked out the window, and there was, you know, a couple more inches of snow on the ground. It was not really a pleasant surprise at this point.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
Well, it's again. It's like we just started over. We, you know, we got to March and we just said, oh, you know, we're just going to do January and February over. How about that?
So that is exactly how it feels. It's like Groundhog Day. Yes.
It is. It is. So I'm so glad to talk to you guys today because I'm really fascinated by the topic of Zen parenting and some of the things that you discuss in your seminars and in your writings and on your show, mindful parenting and self-awareness and understanding yourself, I think are so crucial to being a happy parent, which is a big thing that I'm into, is finding ways to be a happier parent because I think that makes the whole family happier. Mm-hmm. So please tell me about your work. Tell me about kind of what you guys have going on right now, and then we'll go from there.
Well, I guess I'll start with the podcast that you just mentioned. Todd and I do Zen Parenting Radio together. It's a weekly podcast. We also have a show called Conversations with People We Love that we do bi-monthly, so every other Friday. And so Todd and I started doing this show, this podcast, how many years ago, Todd?
2011.
A few years ago.
I don't know. We're 160 shows in.
So we're about 160 shows in. And we started because I wrote, after I wrote my first book, it was called The Self-Aware Parent, and I've since written another one called The Self-Aware Parent 2. I was doing some publicity and had done a podcast with somebody else, and they had suggested to me, why don't you do a podcast and talk about self-aware parenting? And they said, but if you really want to do it well, you should have a partner that you do this podcast with.
And without even consulting me.
Yes, I didn't ask.
She threw my name in the hat.
I said, oh, don't worry. You know, I was trying to jump on the opportunity. I'm like, I'll do it. My husband will do it with me. And I remember I walked up the stairs and I was like, guess what? We're going to do a podcast together.
And I said, what are you talking about? And what's a podcast?
Oh, that's so fun.
So that's how it started. So it originated from my books. But also, Todd and I have created a business together called BU Incorporated. And BU originated with a girls club that Todd and I started. It's called BU Girls Club, where we're working with fifth grade girls on their own self-awareness and their own self-understanding, and having them get that sense of grounding before they moved on to middle school. Because as we know, a lot of things shift and change in that time. You know, the obvious things like, you know, body changes and development, yeah. but also peer relationships and just having a sense of self. So we started working with, you know, fifth grade girls, and we've since moved it into some schools in the area. And, you know, like you were saying, we offer presentations.
So we started with teaching the parents via the podcast. So yeah. we did that, and that was going really well. And then we're like, well, let's try to work with the kids too. So now we're like kind of investing a lot of our energy towards teaching the children with the accompany of the parents. And that's the key issue, is because a lot of these parents want their kids to be self-aware and they're not doing any of the work themselves. And that's something that we find very interesting. And we try to bring an awareness to the parents about that. So
let's kind of break down that term, because I think it's one that gets thrown around a lot, but maybe people don't exactly know what it means. So what does it mean to be a self-aware parent or a self-aware child?
Well, Todd, give our motto of the show. That's kind of a good way to start it.
The best predictor of a child's well-being is a parent's self-understanding. I say that at the beginning of every podcast, and I can say it in my sleep, because it's really what I think is most important. Is, you know, a lot of times we're presenting and a parent will say, well, how do you do a timeout, or do you spank your kid, or do all these other, ask all these other questions, you know, trying to shine a light on the behavior of their child, and they're not doing anything to shed any light upon themselves. So we really try to challenge and empower the parents to not just know how to do a timeout. If you do two timeouts, we happen not to, but.
Well, and I think the whole thing about timeouts and that kind of thing is we're trying to get to a better starting point for them, that all of those things that they are challenged by, all of those issues, surfacey things that they're dealing with their kids, if the parent had a better understanding of their own emotional response, of why they are triggered by something, of why something challenges them, and what their real fear is when working with their children, then a lot of those things wouldn't be necessary. A lot of parents are still kind of dealing with their children in a way that they're kind of trying to heal their own selves. Like, you know, for example, I work with a lot of moms who will say, oh, my daughter is shy and I was shy and I don't want her to have the same experience I did. So I'm going to push her to do this and I'm going to push her to do that. And that's not basically the parent is trying to resolve their issues through their child. And, you know, it's even simple things. Well, I want my children to take piano. Why? Because I didn't get to take piano. Well, right. If you didn't get to take piano, why don't you take piano?
Right. You know? Oh, I love that. Yeah.
And it sounds, you know, I hope it doesn't sound too harsh when, you know, Todd and I say these things, but we've got to have a realization of that separation, that our child is an individual in themselves, and we have to be able to listen to their loves and wishes and, you know, the things that they need.
Well, and we also talk about energy, and, you know, let's say your 4-year-old is melting down. A lot of parents will melt down with them. Like, they'll get really frustrated and get angry because their kid's melting down. And what we try to remind people is you need to bring calmness to chaos. And it's hard to, because when your kid's melting down, you feel like going nuts. At least I do sometimes. Mm-hmm. So we talk about resources and tools of things to calm down yourself, because if you try to meet a kid's chaotic energy with your own frustration and anger, it's going to spiral out of control. So we try to remind them, hey, you need to bring calm to that chaos.
I love how you're talking about starting from the root. I know that when my oldest sons, who are 14 and 16, were really little, I bought lots of discipline books, because I wanted something to tell me, like, if they're doing this, then X, Y, and Z are the steps that you take to make them stop. And I realized later, I guess after I had my third and somehow just stopped trying to correct their behavior in the same ways, that a lot of times, first of all, I was looking for a package that was going to somehow apply across the board to like every situation, which is impossible. But also the reasons that I was trying to solve the behavior were more because I was embarrassed.
Yes.
Or because I felt like I should be the kind of mom who has kids who behave X, Y, and Z ways. And when that didn't happen, I felt bad about myself. So it really did have to start with me.
Absolutely. And you know, it's interesting. A lot of us parents, when we have our kids, we're coming out of the work world, right? You know, maybe we've been in the education system, we've been in the work world. And so then we have a child and we treat raising the child like it's a, and again, it is a job, but we treat it like a job, like that you said, that has all of these steps that we need to take. And if we do it exactly right, then everything's going to work out. And the thing about parenting is that even though I'm not against parenting books per se, it can give us tips. These are children and these are human beings. And there is no rule book where if you do this, this will happen, because they're people. And so we have to have an understanding that parenting is a relational experience. It's a every situation is brand new, which is why Todd and I talk a lot about mindfulness and being present, that just because something is happening when they're three, that doesn't equal they're going to be this kind of person when they're 18. All we need to do is focus on where we are in the moment with them and be conscious of what our own fears and issues
are. Well, and you also talk about books. Like I can believe me, my wife loves books. There's books everywhere. Parenting books, they're all over. And books are great. But what I challenge parents to do is, okay, once you read the books, now forget about the books. And what do you trust? Trust your gut, trust your instinct. Because if you're doing something that a book is telling you to do, it's not necessarily for the right reason. Like get quiet, figure out the best way to do it. And you know, if you read the books carefully enough, you'll integrate some of the ideas that you connect to and the ones you don't throw away. We talk about that on our podcast. We throw out a million different ideas in our podcast. Take what you like and discard the rest.
And without judgment, because I think a lot of times the books kind of sometimes have a little bit of a hysterical tone to them.
Yeah.
Or, you know, there's this, they set up a premise, and I, being in publishing myself, I published some parenting books. I understand the pressure because the publishers are saying you have to set up a problem and, you know, and then express that it's a really big problem. And then you have to show parents ways to solve it. And I think what's ended up happening is we've wound up with this huge collection of parenting books that sort of make, they raise the stakes so high for us that if we don't do it correctly or this way, then we've failed. So,
and you know, Megan, you know, because you're in this world, all the parenting books contradict each other.
Oh, right.
And so, you know, to send a new parent to the bookshelves at the library or at a bookstore and say, okay, go read about it, they're going to pull their hair out because they all say different things. I sometimes think about parenting books like diet books, where every year somebody comes up with a new way to do it that is the right way. Throw away all the old ways, right. Just do this way. And we get very focused and, you know, linear about our thinking, like, now I'm going to only do this. And the truth is, you know, again, like Todd said, you can pull pieces that resonate with you, but really parenting is a very gut instinct thing. It's a feeling thing. It's a relationship thing. And that can't be taken from a book. That's only one-on-one, a personal experience.
I like that. I often say that for me, motherhood is not a job. It is a relationship. And I think that completely changes the way I view how I feel, if I feel like a success at the end of the day,
right.
You know? So if it was a job, boy, I would not be getting really great performance with you.
So you're not alone.
So as I'm listening, you know, there might be a listener saying, hey, Kathy, you wrote a book. What are you talking about? And what I would like to say, because I like talking about my wife's books, is really their stories about how Kathy learned about herself through parenting. It's not a how-to thing. It's short essays. So you know, I just don't want anybody to be like, oh, this lady's contradicting herself.
Well, no, and I said the same thing, and I write parenting books as well. But I think it's, you have to look at them as a tool.
Exactly.
A possible path.
And, you know, I think something that I was really challenging, you know, in everything that Todd and I do, the writing, the presentations and everything, is that there really isn't one way, and that I was challenging the idea that we have to jump on a type of parenting, and that we have to be an advocate for one kind, and that we can find the beauty in many different kinds. And in each situation, we might use something different. You know, we might do something different in a public situation than we do at home. And I don't mean we're not authentic. I just mean that something might fit better in this situation than it does here. And that we don't have to say, you know, we have to be real. You know, what's going to work right now? What's in the best interest of myself and my child? What's, you know, keeping them safe? There's so many pieces. And I believe that we mess ourselves up when we try and be too focused on this is the type of parent I am, instead of this is what's best for everybody in this situation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just really wanted to challenge that idea that, you know, even though a lot of people who will say this is the kind of parenting I do or I use this, I don't there's no problem with that if it's working for you. But if you keep fighting against or keep having challenges, you may want to open your mind up to some other, you know, ways of trying things.
And, you know, I think that a big buzzword in the last at least 10 years since I've been paying close attention has been consistency, which I think is great.
and then not so great if you become a slave to it. Like the, you know, always be consistent. Well, you can't always be consistent because of all the reasons that you just put forth. My reaction to a tantrum in Target is going to be different from my reaction to a tantrum at home. It just is.
You know what I think we need to be most consistent with is being authentic and being real with our kids, meaning that there are times when, you know, I have, you know, say one of the things I want to be consistent with is reading to my kids at night, you know, before they go to bed. Mm-hmm. There may be a night when I'm really tired or struggling and I'd really prefer Todd to take that role, or I'd like them to maybe read on their own. And I can say honestly to my kids, girls, I am wiped. And tonight is just one of those nights that mom can't do this. But guess what? Tomorrow night I'll be back. But tonight I need to rest. A few things happen in that. Number one, you're being real and you're not blaming anybody else and you're not hiding anything or trying to be perfect. And number two, you're teaching your kids that it's okay to take a break. It's okay to admit that you're feeling challenged. It's okay. So you're teaching them how to be a real person. And right. That's the thing I try and be consistent in, is I want to be as authentic as I can be.
Well, and I'll say that a lot of moms, especially full-time moms, try to be perfect moms, and they try to be martyrs, and they put their kids' needs in front of their own at all costs, and they don't have anything left for themselves. And, you know, one of the huge foundational things that we talk about on our podcast is that you need to have something for yourself before you give it to anybody else. And a lot of moms out there are giving because they think it's the right thing to do. They just want to give everything they can to their kids, just love them and unconditionally, which is what you do. But you also, if you forget about yourself, it's going to come back and burn you at some point down the road.
Yeah. And we set sort of these bars for ourselves, I think, sometimes that are really unrealistic. And then it's really the kids, I think, who end up paying the price at the end, because you can't keep that up.
Exactly. And, you know, Todd's comment, he just said, you know, we do all these things because we love our kids. And of course we love our kids. We want to give them the best. But sometimes this is the self-awareness piece. Sometimes we got to look at it and say, why am I doing this? Is it really a love thing? Or is it because I'm afraid of my own failures? I'm afraid of, like you were saying, Megan, I'm afraid of what other people will say. I'm afraid of, you know, maybe I haven't even looked at my past and recognized that everything I do for other people. Like, there's so many levels to why we do what we do. And a lot of times we put the word, well, I love my kids. Well, of course you do. But sometimes the best gift you can give to your kids is loving yourself. So A, you have more to give to them, and B, so they learn how to love themselves. And a lot of times the whole martyrdom thing just teaches them to be martyrs.
Right, right. You know, so they do learn from that, from watching.
They do. That's another one of our favorite sayings, is that kids don't learn by listening to what you say. They learn by watching how you live.
I'd love to talk about, and I know awareness is a big one for you guys, but so is acceptance. And while you were talking about your children, and I think you said the oldest is 10, is that right? I'm wondering if you ever had an experience where your one of your girls at, say, the age of 2 or 3 seemed like they were going to be a certain way and then completely changed.
Absolutely. And Todd, you're going to know which one I'm going to talk about, right?
Oh, you need to tell me, because I have no idea.
Jason in preschool.
Okay.
Because I write about it a lot. Yes. In my first book, I wrote about the fact that my oldest daughter was very, what word would I use? She wasn't shy at home, meaning she wasn't always shy, but when she would get into situations like preschool or maybe a class or a birthday party, she was socially shy.
Right.
And so much so that I really had to shift things where I would have to always be the one to drop her off, or I'd have to stay at a birthday party, or I would have to make sure that, you know, I sat in on the gymnastics class even though the teacher didn't want me there.
And the other parents are outside the class.
Yeah, the other parents are out there, and I'm the one sitting on the mat with everybody. And because she was my first, it was a little challenging in that, just like you said, Megan, I wasn't sure what this was going to turn out to look like in the future. And I also didn't know if I was always making the right choice. But what the bottom line was for me is that when my daughter looked at me and said, I'm very afraid, I need, you know, I'd like you to stay with me, and she's only 3 or 4 years old, it was very hard for me to say no, because if I would say no, it would be based on things like, well, I don't want you to be shy, or I don't want you when you're in second grade to not be able to go to a party. It would have been based on future concerns.
Right.
So, they're not parenting from the present
moment. It would be very, so Todd and I mean, these were not easy things. He and I would talk about these choices all the time, but to cut to the chase, my 10-year-old, almost 11-year-old, is the one who can go anywhere by herself now. She, you know, wants to babysit other kids. She wants to be the one who, you know, I want to walk in by myself. I want to walk there by myself. And I think you know, now in hindsight, I think she just needed that grounding and that sense of security early so she could then venture out on her own.
Yeah, she was 4 years old and the preschool teachers called us in and said, listen, your daughter hasn't talked to us once. And school started in August and this was like in February. And she's like, your daughter hasn't spoken a single word to
us. And they were saying, does she talk? And we're like, of course she talks.
Right. And, yeah. And you know, there's a part of me that would be, that would want to say, hey, you need to start talking to your parents, but we did, or to your teachers, but we did not say that because she was four. And it's no, and right. Then the other story was at the birthday party, she was kind of on the outside and she was not like talking.
It didn't look like she was having fun.
It didn't look like she was having fun because she wasn't participating the way all the other kids were participating. Hmm. And then she shocked Kathy by saying,
well, she, you know, like I was at this birthday party with her and, you know, I was again the only parent and all the kids were playing and she was just watching. And then I took her to the bathroom and she said, Mom, I'm having the best time. I would have never known that. And I think that's, you know, these are the learning experiences. Our kids are such fantastic teachers because if we just get, you know, like Todd said, if we can have some self-understanding and not get too involved and not get too, what's the word I'm looking for, where we, you know, take it all personally and we start to make it about us. If we can stand back from that, we can allow them to have their own experiences. But too often we get too enmeshed with it. And so I could have really ruined that party for her if I was telling her, go be with the other kids, go be like them. And then, Megan, here's my favorite thing, is that so many times with little kids, we say to them, why don't you go do what everybody else is doing? Why don't you go play like the rest of the kids are? Why don't you be like them? And then when they're 13, we say, why are you following your friends?
I love that.
You know,
oh, that's great. Yeah. And
so it's just one of those things we have to remember of what the message we're giving early.
I, you know, while you were telling this story, I was thinking about how much of, especially at that age, I feel like 3 and 4 and 5 is such a tender age because the children are starting to kind of get out there in the world a little bit, but they still need you. And you don't, there's so many conflicting opinions about how you should be interacting with them publicly, you know, at that. But I was thinking about how so much of the parenting I did, especially with my older two, oldest two, at that age was coming from a place of anxiety. So it wasn't, you know, I was so anxious about tomorrow, like not tomorrow literally, but 10 years from now, tomorrow, you know, are they going to get into college because I didn't do this? Or, you know, what am I doing today that's going to completely screw them up in the future? And I had my 14-year-old now was one of those wild children. Like when you're in Target, he would run away and hide under things and he threw tantrums. I mean, he was just one of those kids. And he was the kid who could never sit still at their desk, like, and is bouncing around the room. And also when an authority figure tells you something like, hey, your kid doesn't talk, or hey, your kid can't sit still, and they say it with that look, you know, like the kind of the furrowed brows, the very well-meaning, concerned look.
I do.
It's really hard not to take that to heart and to get all, and then to start changing what you do based on somebody else's opinion who doesn't even live in your house.
Absolutely. Oh, and I think that is one of, you know, I used to, now I don't do this as much, but I used to be a coach and I used to be a therapist, so I'd work with families one-on-one, and that was one of the most common experiences is the parents would come to me and say, I don't think that there's a huge problem, but the teacher says that my child is doing such and such. Or I feel like things are good in the home, but when they go out, I get all this feedback that my child is not doing this or that. And again, there's two parts to that. Number one is the parent self-aware enough to maybe see what's happening?
Right.
You know, you always have to check that out. But on the other side, a lot of people have different opinions about how kids should respond, what they should do, and what is quote unquote normal. And I think, I hope, maybe I'm too invested in this world now, but I'm hoping that the perspective of normal is broadening a little bit, like where we're getting an understanding that a four-year-old kid isn't supposed to sit for 5 hours, that's not good for their body or their brain. And so we're starting to recognize that kids have different behaviors and that there's a biological reason for it. But at the same time, to your point, a lot of the work that, you know, I would do was just being an advocate for that parent, you know, if it'd be sitting in on a school meeting or whatever it may be and giving the teacher maybe a different perspective, or maybe could we try this rather than just saying, labeling them, saying this is who they are. And if you don't do something, the world's going to fall apart. Instead, let's try this and this and see if they respond. And, you know, sometimes it was simple as can be, and sometimes it went a different direction. But, you know, at least that's a step we need to take before we start labeling kids and saying they are something that they may not be.
And I wanted to finish or to kind of bring you up to date with him nowadays, at probably the age of 8, or it was like something a switch flipped, and he turned into the calmest kid, and is now like my sweetest, quietest, calmest kid. The only thing he does is pace a lot.
Interesting.
That's it.
Well,
so
my guess is that probably happened because of some of the decisions you made between the ages of 4 and 8, and not all parents would have dealt with it the same way. So.
And you know, Todd, I'm thinking about, Todd and I have a niece that Maddie was exactly the same way. Yeah. We have a niece who's very similar, it sounds like, to your son, who was just, they used to call her, they used to, because she used to jump around all the time
she'd
in class. They had a name for her because they'd be like, she's so jumpy. And she kind of didn't have a lot of spatial awareness, and she'd run into you and she'd trip. And
she'd be on the floor. Like, what are you doing on the floor?
And then all of a sudden, same thing, just like your son, something switched, and it was around 6th grade. Mm. All of a sudden, this like comfort in her body, this slowness, this calmness. And she's 17 now, and she's still like that.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting.
So we all need the freedom to kind of grow into ourselves.
Yes.
And adults and kids.
Yes. Yeah. And not think that, I think the other piece is that we label certain things as quote unquote bad. Mm-hmm. When there's really moving a lot may mean that you're just, that's who you are in that moment, is you just need to move to express yourself. And that's how you get your energy out. And that's your personality. And we tend to label things as either good or bad. And I think, again, we have to broaden our perspective about there are just different ways, and they don't necessarily have to be so black and white.
So let's go to where there's a parent who is listening to us and saying, this all sounds great, but next time I'm in the store with my 3-year-old and they're raising, you know, H-E double hockey sticks, or I am in a situation where my kid is freaking out at home and I don't know what to do, where do you start if you don't have that laid out sort of step-by-step roadmap? Where do you go to make the right decision?
I don't know if Kathy will feel the same way, but in my opinion, and this is not an easy answer, but if it were me and the kid is melting down, you can try to calm a kid down in a grocery store. I don't know if I've ever seen it happen, but maybe it happens from time to time.
Yeah.
You know, the whole idea of irrational, you're trying to speak rationally to somebody who is irrational in that moment.
We're going to leave. They're like, I don't care.
So keep your grocery cart where it is and just go in the car. Yeah. And let them melt down there. I mean, because if you are embarrassed, which I am when, you know, if my kids start kicking and screaming, just get out of there. And I think a lot of people feel like disrespected or like, don't you know how this is affecting me? There's people looking at me. Who cares? Just get out of there for 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. And give them an opportunity to chill out a little bit. I mean, that's what I would say.
Well, and I have two thoughts about this. Number one, something that I did with all my girls as they were growing up, and we'd have to do our big Target runs and all that kind of stuff, is before we walked in the store, I would talk to them, not in a dictatorial way where I was saying, this is what you'll do, but I'd say, okay, talk to me about the store. What happens in the store? You know, before we go in, you know, please stay close to the cart. You know, and then I'd look at the other one. I'd say, okay, what else? You know, we're going to not scream. We're going to not, you know, and kind of give them a sense of this is the expectation before we go in.
Right. And we're not here to buy something for you.
Right. Yeah, right. We've never been from that. Yeah. We don't do that.
We set that tone early.
Yeah. And so, you know, just so they have that awareness going in, because a lot of times kids don't know what you like. I still will sometimes say to my youngest, you know, we're in a store. You need to be quiet. And she'll say, we are. Like, she didn't even have the awareness. You know what I mean?
That's so funny. Yeah.
And so sometimes just setting that expectation where they understand where we are and what is expected, what's socially typical. And then, you know, to Todd's point, if even with all that, if they're challenged, which they may be, there's two parts. Number one, if they're challenged because they fell and they hurt themselves, I have no problem stopping, sitting on the ground and letting them cry. I mean, if they hurt themselves in that moment, what's most important is that they get soothed, and there's nothing wrong with crying after hurting yourself. You know, we don't need to rush through that process, you know, just let it out. And as long as it's not a screaming crazy thing, but usually when kids hurt themselves, it's a different kind of cry.
Right. Mm-hmm.
If it's a tantrum where they just want something and they're feeling not heard, I would do more like what Todd said. You know, if I really can't resolve this, if your irrationality is so over the top that we can't have a conversation, we're just going to have to leave this situation. Mm-hmm. And I know that parents don't like that answer, especially, you know, I get that a lot from parents who are like, but I'm on a play date and I want to be with my friends, and, you know, or we drove all the way here. I don't want to leave. And these are the difficult parts of parenting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's not a thing where we wake up and we say it's going to go just like this, very smooth. There's a lot of bumps in the road. And the only thing I can say is those times will not last. You know, now that I have a almost 11-year-old and a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old, I can't even think of the last time these, you know, these kind of things
happened. Oh, me either. It's funny to think about how much of my life that used to be just kind of dealing with the uncertainty of how they were going to behave. And now it's kind of pretty predictable, I have to say.
It is. There's a little more of a flow. And, you know, I kind of feel like as they get older, instead of all that physical work that we were doing, it becomes a little more emotional, mental, where it's still challenging, but it's not challenging in the same way.
I also love what you said about setting the stage. And I was just thinking back to when my kids were a little bit younger. We used to travel with the group a lot. And I'm talking when they were maybe like a baby, 2, you know, 5 and 7, like around in those ages. And you'd walk into a restaurant and you'd get that look like, oh, from everybody. But if we made a point of, before we went in, if we were like, this is going to be great. Here's what we're all going to do. Like, we're going to really represent, you know, team, family, and like, and kind of like set the expectation for them, they usually were great. It was when we sort of rushed them in and like made them sit and didn't set the scene for them that they would not handle it as well.
Well, and I'll jump in. I'm a big fan of putting your kids in a position to succeed. So in other words, if your 3-year-old usually takes a nap and she didn't get her nap in, and then you're going to dinner at 6:30 that night, and then she starts melting down. You're like, well, why is she melting down? It's because she missed her nap. So don't expect the best behaved kids if they're already depleted, their resources are depleted, they're emotional. So just understand, you know, the big picture. And I'm always shocked by how often parents just don't connect those two dots.
That makes a lot of sense.
Well, and, you know, exactly what Todd said, I think that that's the big self-awareness piece with parenting is that, you know, the way that we are feeling is what our kids pick up on. And if we are already anxious going into a situation, or like you said, Megan, we're trying to rush, or we're trying to get it done, or we're so afraid that the kids are going to melt down, or we have to get here on time, the kids pick up on that. And they don't relate to it like an adult. They relate to it like a kid. So it makes them uncomfortable. It makes them jumpy. They feel that energy. They feel that anxious energy, and they may not understand it or know why it's there, but then they're, you know, it's the same thing as they're watching, you know, instead of listening to what we say, they're watching how we live. They see that we're anxious, so they start to be anxious. So we have to be, like you said, very, you know, if we're going into a restaurant situation, we have to be calm and we have to say, this is going to be great. And, you know, and we're only going to be here for a little bit, and then we're going to have dinner, and then we're going to go home and relax. So the kids have a feeling of this is a good thing. And this seems, and it, you know, a lot of parents will say, well, I say that, but are you saying it with a sense of anxiety? Mm-hmm. Or are you really
like
believing?
You better not act up.
Exactly. Right. Tone is so important with kids, and tone and how you're really feeling inside. Like the motto that Todd and I have for BU, the company that we started, is kids and grownups living from the inside out. That a lot of times we try and do things on the outside. You know, I'm not going to look anxious. I'm not going to say anxious things, but we're feeling it inside. And that's what kids feel.
And I think that too, expressing to kids that you think that they can do it. So there's a big difference between saying you better behave yourself and I know you can handle this.
Absolutely. You've done this before, you know, you can handle this. And sometimes kids will be a little anxious and say, well, what if this happens? And you can say, well, then we'll handle it and we'll deal with it. You have the ability. Like, you're kind of giving them that sense of empowerment instead of telling them how you're going to handle them. You say to them, I know you can handle it, you know, and they feel more solid and empowered.
To that topic, I wanted to circle back to your BU workshops, because in your BU Incorporated, is that what it's called?
Correct.
BU Incorporated. Tell me, and I know that your motto is that I'm totally going to butcher this, but essentially self-aware parents have self-aware children is kind of what you're saying. But beyond that, what specifically do you do to help children, especially older kids who are kind of getting into that phase where what their peers say matters to them a lot, and, you know, they're dealing with school stuff? How do you help them build those tools?
You know, we really start focusing with, you know, especially fifth grade tends to be the time that we're talking to these kids. And Todd works with boys and I work with girls. You know, we separate them out. And so we kind of have different
styles.
Language and styles, because obviously boys hear things a little differently,
right,
you know, than girls do. But what we start talking to them is about their value. and about their worth, and that each and every one of them has something to share. And we give them that sense of not as a literal thing, like you're going to be the one who goes to Harvard or you're going to be the one who's the president of the club, but like you have these skills and these gifts that nobody else has. And we need you here on this earth. You know, you're here for a reason. And your whole life is about finding those reasons why you're here. And it's an exciting adventure, and that you have the opportunity to help other people, and helping other people helps you. Again, we're always going at the inside out, helps you feel good. And how having a sense of self-compassion is the first step towards for having compassion for other people. And that self-love helps you love other people. And we kind of, again, we start them from understanding their insides, because if they can understand that, that's what they project to the world. Instead of giving them a set of things like say this, do this, where it's almost like an agenda and it's almost like faking it.
Right.
We're trying to help them with that sense of self-acceptance and self-awareness. And honestly, these are the things we tell their parents too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're talking universal principles with these kids. We're not coming up with a brand new curriculum for the kids and then telling the parents something different. These are, we may be using different language or different techniques, but it's the same message.
Yeah. And okay. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that actually finish your thought, Todd, because I might tangent here in a second.
Well, you know, we talked about, so that if we wanted to drill down to the absolute foundational thing, it's exactly what Kathy just said. It's that you are enough. The minute that you were born, you were enough. And we feel it's our job to remind them that they are enough. And then secondarily, we teach them emotional intelligence. We teach them, half these kids don't even know what the word empathy means. They don't know what compassion is. I asked these boys to raise their hand if they've ever said, I love myself. And they all look at me like I'm a crazy dude.
Right.
And I'm like, all right, everybody stand up, give yourself a hug and say, I love myself. And I know that they're like, oh, that guy's weird. But I just hope that at some point in the future, they're going to start to integrate some of these ideas. And to Kathy's point, it's not just us telling these kids. We try to work with the kids and the adults, because if we just work to one side of it, if we just work to the parents, it's less effective. And if we just work to the kids, it's less effective. We got to get everybody on the same page.
Okay. So what you just said completely set up my next question. So thank you.
My pleasure.
I actually was just writing about this today. My daughter is 4 and she'll say things like, I'm awesome. Or I just love myself. Like, she really is so self-confident. And part of me is like, wow, that's great. I can't remember the last time I was so completely sure of how amazing I am. But also, there's that little part of me that's like, oh, you know, should she really be not the self-confident, but it's almost like we're hearing so much backlash about the self-esteem movement and praising your kids and all this stuff that it's like we haven't found that. I guess the question I'm getting at here is, please tease out the difference between false praise and false self-esteem building and what you're talking about here.
Absolutely. It's probably one of the most common questions we get. Okay. You know, we talk about self-love with kids and aren't we building them up to be something they're not? The truth is about being special is that every single person in the world is special in some way. The difference is it's not a competition. You don't have to be the most special in the class compared to everybody else. You just know you're special and that everybody else has something to offer. And there's a oneness and a connectedness and an understanding that everybody has value. And what we don't understand is that the narcissism, like the type of person who goes around telling everybody, and not four-year-olds, Megan, four-year-olds should be saying,
entitled,
I love myself.
Right.
Exactly. Because they are not filtered.
Right.
They haven't had that societal pressure to take that inside.
Right.
But the, you know, the narcissism, the people who go out in the world and tell everybody how good they are the ones who are the most insecure inside. Mm. They're the ones who need to tell everybody because they need external validation to feel good. The kids who actually feel good about themselves don't need as much external validation. Mm. They're the ones who kind of go out and do things and they don't need everybody to tell them how great they are. Maybe they do get a trophy and they're like, great, but the trophy maybe sits on a shelf and they never think about it again. That's not what they need. They just appreciate being with other people, doing what they love. That's self-love. And what we can, you know, the like you said, teasing out the praise, that's been a big issue in the last couple of years where because of the Nurture Shock book, the Poe Bronson book about, you know, they did the research about if we, you know, overpraise our kids that they actually will not take risks and they can potentially fail. They won't take risks and they'll not be comfortable with failure. But it's when we're praising for something that's not true. For example, if you are telling your child you are the best in the class, you are the best dancer in that class, you, if you're putting them in a position where you're having them compete against other people and maybe not even telling them the truth, that's not authentic praise. If it's a praise like your child just ate dinner and they brought their plate in, you know, to the kitchen to clean up and you say, thank you for doing that, that's great praise.
Right.
That's real praise. There's nothing wrong with saying thank you. Even if you expect them to bring in the plate, gratitude is a wonderful thing to share. Or if you say to your child, you know, one of the greatest statements I saw in a blog, I think it came out like a year ago, but it keeps recycling, is when your child is playing a sport and they are out there and they're doing a great job, and maybe you're not even noticing what the other kids are doing because you're so focused on your child, when they come off the field, to say to them, I love to watch you play. Versus way to get that score, you know, way to take that ball, way to be better than the other kids. That's where we challenge our kids, and they, that's where they will not take risk. That's where they will not be creative or do risk-taking things.
They're afraid of failure.
They're afraid to fail because they're afraid they won't get that love for you, from you. So if you're saying things about the overall and how you appreciate who they are, they will still go out there and try new things.
And, you know, as you're saying this, I mean, I think where parents are getting caught up is that a research comes out, or, you know, a big study comes out, and it essentially gets distilled into like a sentence. And that's what we hear. So don't praise your kids anymore. The self-esteem movement is dead, or whatever it is. Kids are too coddled. Whatever these messages are that we're getting. But what you're saying here is really just be human. If you feel something about what your kids have just done, you can say it. But if you're praising them because you feel like, okay, this is the time I need to build their self-esteem, and like you're like a robot,
yes, you
know, like a self-esteem building robot, it's not going to ring true to them.
They'll know it. And that's the thing, you know, before in the interview when we were talking about consistency, consistency is being real. You know, consistency is being true. And just like you said, the way we speak to our kids, if we're doing it out of fear of something else, or if we're doing it so they are, you know, they feel good about their sports so everybody else thinks they're great. If we're doing it for these external reasons, our kids feel it. And they may not fully understand it or be able to articulate it, but they have that sense of discomfort with it. But if we are talking to our kids from a very real place and saying, like what you said, what we're really feeling in the moment, that's called relationship. That's called connectedness. And we don't have to have any fear of them getting what parents always say, I don't want my kid to have a big head. A big head comes from them not having a sense of self, so they go out to everybody else to get it.
I love that. We have to wrap up, but I would love to just make sure that all our listeners know a little bit more about your show. They can find show notes for past episodes at zenparentingradio.com. Is that correct?
Yep, zenparentingradio.com. We have archives. If there's a certain topic you want to search through, you know, if you want to put in discipline, just there's a search box, discipline, and all the podcasts that we did that have anything to do with, that have to do with discipline will pop up, or, you know, self-awareness. You just put, the search box is a really effective way to kind of scan through a bunch of podcasts to see which one you want to tune into. So
great. Okay. And it's a weekly show.
Yep. It's every Tuesday we broadcast Zen Parenting Radio. And then every other Friday we do conversations with people we love. Kathy has a blog on her website, and your website is Kathy Cassano.
KathyCAdams.com, and it's Kathy with a C. And then our website where you can find our show is ZenParentingRadio.com.
Okay, and I will link to all of the stuff in the show notes as well, and I'll give the address of that in a sec. It has been so wonderful talking with the two of you, and I definitely think everyone should check out your show because it's great, and all your stuff. This has been a fascinating conversation. Thank you.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks, Megan.
Thanks again, everyone, for inviting me into your home this week. If you want links to any of the resources or sites I talked about with Todd and Kathy or Shayna today, check the show notes at thehappiesthome.com/episode24, or you can just go to thehomehour.com to see all the previous episodes. You can also check us out on iTunes, and if you do, I would so love if you'd leave a rating or review of the show while you're there. Don't forget to go check out Amazon Prime now before the price goes up. It's at thehappiesthome.com/prime. And that's all for this week. I'll be back with another episode next Thursday. Until then, best wishes for a happy week from my home to yours.